I'm not sure how much farther we can define this down. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principle Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst, and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
And Barry, I'm glad to be back with you, and this time we're in the studio, so none of the nonsense that we had last night while we were fighting the bandwidth issues with the election results. Ladies and gentlemen, if you heard today's show...
It would be today's show for us. Because we record this program a day ahead of time.
So if you heard yesterday's program, we apologize for that. We had to deal with bandwidth issues. Issues, and sometimes when we deal with bandwidth issues, we do the best we can.
There are issues. Let's put it that way. But you know what, Chuck, though? We had been looking at this. It was a sign that many people were concerned about what was going on. And as we said the other day, we're going to talk more about the outcome of Tuesday's electoral activities on our Saturday program. Because right now, what we need to talk about, and especially after Tuesday night's outcomes, is what we're calling our series on the fundamentals. We're going to be talking about fundamental ideas about our culture, fundamental ideas about the way we view the world, fundamental ideas about how we deal with issues in front of us from a biblical and a constitutional perspective. Yesterday, we talked a little bit about Justice Antonin Scalia and his concept that he's not sure if the original intent of the Constitution can be saved because of how seductive it is for both judges and for the public to want to say there ought to be a law when the Constitution doesn't allow for such a law.
Well, here's the concept that has been lost, and Scalia gets it. I mean, that was a very short interview that we talked about, just a little segment of it. But the fact is, the part that has been lost is you may be able to pass a law, but you can't do it at the federal level. The whole idea that has been lost is federalism, and that is the whole problem that we're dealing with, is the fact that the federal government has encroached. It doesn't seem to matter who's in power, what party has Congress, what party has the presidency. What matters is the fact that the federal bureaucracy has encroached systematically upon the rights and responsibilities of the states and the individual.
That's true. And we're going to be talking about it. Now, you talked about, I like this, the rights and responsibilities of the individual.
Right.
Because what we're going to talk about today is a little bit along that same line of thinking, but we're looking at it from the other side of the coin. We're looking at it from the side of the coin of the society that we have today, where everybody wants rights, but nobody wants to take responsibilities. As a matter of fact, what we're looking at, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to post this up on our website. It's an article that was written on Election Day by one of, I believe, mine and Chuck's favorite economists, Walter Williams. Now, Walter Williams is a commentator as well and a deep thinker. And he wrote a column at CNSnews.com on Tuesday the 6th, titled Our Deviant Society. And that's, you know, what I was referencing in the opener was that whole idea about defining deviancy down. And that's where he's taking this, that we are getting to a point in our culture, in our society, in our body politic even, where things not too far in the distant past that we would have considered unthinkable, unspeakable, and definitely illegal, we now are recognizing, accepting, approving, embracing, and celebrating. Now, everybody can think immediately that we're talking about gay marriage, but that's not all we're talking about.
No, it's not everything.
We're talking of many different issues across our spectrum, but I think Williams hits it very much square on the head that what we have is a whole change in the way we address things. And he starts out his column, he says, here's the usage of the term gentleman. The gentleman helped the fallen lady to her feet. Now, we all recognize that. Now, here's the other one. He says that we might get from a newscaster or police spokesperson. Tonight, we report on the arrest of two gentlemen who raped and murdered an 80-year-old woman. Says, well, when in that earlier sense of the word gentleman, it means honest and brave and loyal and courteous, all good virtues. Today, he says, the word gentleman is used interchangeably in reference to decent people and the scum of the earth.
Well, that's absolutely correct. I mean, I've heard people do it all the time, and what it is a sign of radical egalitarianism.
Right. Coupled with the postmodern theme,
yes,
where we can change the meaning of words to fit anything we want it to fit.
Exactly. Think in terms of this. You know, one of the things that always disturbs me, there's a local radio station I like to listen to because occasionally I'm an old heavy metal guy, and I tune in to one of the old classic rock and roll stations, and what they run over and over and over and over and over and again is advertisements for quote-unquote gentlemen's clubs.
Oh, boy.
And the descriptions given of what happens in these gentlemen's clubs means that no gentleman worthy of the name
in that historic sense of the
in
term,
the historic sense would ever be caught within 100 yards of the place.
But the in the modern sense that he uses in those police reports, that term gentleman might very well describe some of these people.
Sadly, yes. So it, basically what it does, if you think about this, it removes the incentive for gaining that title. Since everybody can get it, why do anything special to be referred to as a gentleman?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I can remember my mother, and I haven't always adhered to this particularly well, but my mom tried to instill in me the things I needed to do to be considered a gentleman. And nowadays, basically, I could do anything and still be referred to as the gentleman who beat me, robbed me, kicked me around, stole my car, cheated me. Yeah, name some form of sin, and someone will describe you as the gentleman who did that to me. I always laugh when I see the news, and someone will come on, well, I saw this gentleman go over and take this woman out of the car by her collar and throw her to the ground, and I'm like, madam, that was no gentleman.
No, not at all. Not at all. And Williams works with this, in this idea, to talk about the fact that why we have this modification of the language is because we want to be non-judgmental.
Yes.
And I think he hits on a significant theme here, because instead of talking about sodomite pairings, we talk about gay marriage. And that's non-judgmental, because as long as you're okay with it, it's okay. And yes, on Tuesday on Election Day, and I want to talk about this particular part of it, two states in this union of ours, the United States, actually had voters go to the polls and approve homosexual pairings, giving them legal authority and calling them marriage, that being the states of Maryland and of Maine. So now it's the first states that have actually passed by popular initiative an approval of recognizing homosexual pairings that wasn't done by a legislature or done by a court. Because, you know, we've got civil unions in Vermont and Massachusetts, you know, was done by a court order and with the former governor and former candidate Mitt Romney pressing that to get it done. But he's saying that right now we do this because we don't want to be judgmental. Because if we actually have a judgment, that means that there's a standard. And if there's a standard, that means that there is something that's right and conversely something that is wrong, and that those ideas of right and wrong are fixed and absolute.
Yeah, the absolute standard, and therein lies the problem. Everyone will tell you, I can remember hearing this when I was in college as an older student, there are no absolutes. And I can remember thinking, okay, well, that's an absolute statement.
Exactly.
So there are I can remember someone telling me they asked a college professor, who said, well, now that's an absolute statement. So if there are no absolutes, then your statement is absolutely incorrect. And he said, no, the only absolute is that there are no absolutes. Well, okay. That's a little circular reasoning.
Well, it's a self-defeating statement.
Yeah, so. Of course.
You know, and he talks about the fact that what we're engaging in when we do that is if we do not have standards, what we have is social deviancy. In other words, anything goes. When there was no king, and I mean king not in the sense of a person, but in the sense of an absolute fixed standard of law. When there was no king in Israel, the people did what was right in their own eyes. That's the situation we find ourselves in more and more in this country, of having this idea where we want to be so non-judgmental about issues because your truth is just as equivalent as my truth, which is just as equal as their truth. Well, if that's the case, then there's no truth at all. Because you can't have conflicting things and both of them be true. If A, then not B.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, logically inconsistent. You can't have something that's A and then a non-A and both of them be true.
Well, I just listened to a Christian broadcaster today who was basically talking about a debate. And what had happened here is that basically someone had declared that he was a Christian, but that he believed in that God, other things were also had validity, other religious paths to God, quote unquote, had validity. I said, I'm sorry, you cannot be a Christian and say that there are multiple paths to God, because Christ was very clear.
I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father but by me.
Yeah.
That's it. That's an absolute statement. It's a truth statement. It's a statement of right and wrong. It's a statement of judgment and value.
And absolute standard.
And an absolute standard.
And,
that's right.
And therein lies the problem. Too many times, and you are going to be hearing in the upcoming times, that we need to drop our standards. We need to lower the goal and basically become more like the other people.
Or you might hear it in the political sense, we need to broaden the base.
Yes.
And create a bigger tent to embrace more people.
And basically what those people are saying is, we're too rigid in our standards. Without saying so, they're saying, we're too rigid in our standards.
Well, I have a little news for them, Chuck, and for our listeners. If you're not rigid in your standards, you have no standards.
And that's the
bottom
line.
Because that's the whole idea of a standard, is a fixed point that doesn't change, that can be counted on time and time again to mark a boundary, to set a specific point of which this far and no farther, or this is the point I will stand on. So if you're not rigid about your standards, it's like the old joke from Saturday Night Live about Reagan and Gaddafi. Gaddafi stands there and goes, line in the sand, you cross it, you die. Reagan steps across it, he says, now this line in the sand, you cross it, you die. And just keeps going, going until he's back in the water saying,
yeah,
line in the, okay, never mind.
And that's exactly how the other side wins. Remember that the Marxist philosophy has always been, there's a short little way of looking at it, two steps forward, one back.
Right, it's called the long march through the institution.
That's right, it's Gramsci. We're not going to bore you with who Antonio Gramsci is, but take our word for it, this is a Gramscian way of looking at it. Two steps forward, one back. You always get too aggressive. You take one step back, but you've still got one step progress.
Right.
And hence the name progressivism.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, this all ties together with what we were talking about yesterday with Antonin Scalia, because this is how Williams kind of sums it up. He talks about all these things. And if you read his article, you're going to see he goes into some specifics about various issues, including some of the president's actions. But he says, it's all part and parcel of defining deviancy down, which is the term former U.S. Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan coined in 1993 to describe how we switch from moral absolutes to situational morality, and from strict constitutional interpretation, there's our Scalia reference, to the Constitution being a living document. So because if you don't have fixed standards of right and wrong, and you don't have a Constitution that is what it says it is and says these are the limits on your government, you don't have a Constitution at all.
And Barry, that's why I said yesterday, I said this, people are constantly saying, you're predictable. I can always tell what you're going to do about this or that or another thing. Yes, you can, because I know what the rules are. Now, that doesn't mean I won't necessarily always go by the rules.
Go by those rules, but, that's
show.
The thing that each of us has to wrestle with between ourselves and God. But the point is, to live in a civil society, there must be some fixed standards and some rules, else every man will do that which is right in his own eyes.
Which is anarchy.
Which is absolutely anarchy.
And what happens always after anarchy?
Totalitarianism comes in to fill the void.
And then it is a long time, if ever, that you regain your ability to exercise your freedom and your liberty, because someone is always going to be there to say, you can't do that. That's against the rules, even when the rules are arbitrary. You see, the problem here is that once you slip into anarchy, you're going to live by a set of standards, either of God's making or of man's making. And the chances are you're going to step into a totalitarian situation where the rules are completely arbitrary and made by men. And that is not a comfortable situation to be in, because at that point you run into the problem that early Christians had in the Roman Empire, where the government would require them to do something that was against their biblical principles. And they came to that crisis and they said, do I obey God or do I obey men?
Well, we know what the answer to that is from Scripture.
That's right.
It is better to obey God than to obey man.
That's right. That's the book of Acts. Okay, Barry, guess what?
We're out of time.
We're out of time.
And so we have to obey that hard and fast standard.
Yeah, actually, WLRY has a very firm standard about that. The shows have to be 15 minutes long.
Well, we'll try to adhere to it and actually make them listenable.
There you go. So join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.